work I did together with Sam White, my supervisor from my PhD, Volker Springel, and Amina Helmi from Kroning. So in this talk, I tried to present a way how to actually get caustics in body simulations. And by caustics, I mean fine-grained caustics, so the very small caustics in these halos, for example. So before I start telling you about this method, I will just review in some slides what the current state of the art of n-body simulations of Milky Way sized halos is. So just some facts about simulations, so especially simulations that focus on the small scales. So what we already heard yesterday from the VLFTR 2 and 1, so you need an extreme high amount of particles to simulate these things, these small scales. And this requires a lot of computing power, and manpower actually. But the crucial point to these simulations actually is that you need not only high resolution, but you also need a very good quality of your simulation, and it's not a trivial task. So to get this, recently MPA, together with other institutes, finished a new simulation that we call the Aquarius Simulation Series. This is actually a simulation that is five times larger than the VLFTR 2. So we have in the high resolution regions 4.25 billion particles. And within the VRI radius, we have still 1.5 billion particles of this simulation. And we have simulated one of these halos at different resolutions, and the highest resolution has a softening length of 15 parsec in the simulation. So this is currently the highest resolution simulation of a Milky Way sized halo. And due to the large number of different resolutions we have, we can make quite good qualitative statements about the quality of this simulation actually is. And we resolve in this halo, in this particular CO2 halo, about 300,000 subhalos. So to show you how good the quality of the convergence is, I have here a profile of the density of this object we simulated for five different resolutions up to this biggest resolution here. And here the vertical lines are always two times the length where the force of the spinite softening becomes Newtonian. So you can see that we have perfect convergence up to these radii for all these resolutions. And this is an image of the density field. And you can see this enormous amount of substructure in this. And you can then zoom in here and see again all these small things. This is not noise or particles. These are real subhalos in these simulations. So this is where the 300,000 subhalos come from here. Right, from exactly the same initial conditions here. Yeah.
I have a question about the qualities. They use the criterion of convergence.
Yeah.
But is that the end of the story for quality? Because if you run a computer program and it converges, okay. But it may not give you an accurate answer.
Yeah, that's for sure right. I mean, what the convergence tells you is, imagine you put some physics in your code, and then you use approximations in the code to calculate forces and so on. But what the convergence tells you is how far you can trust actually the codes you get with physics, how far you can trust the results you get with the physics in the code up to which level. For example, in the density profile, if you continue these lines here, then you get for the lowest resolution, you get just a core due to the softening in these simulations, so you cannot trust them anymore. So this is why you want to make these convergence studies to see how far you can trust the results. And you trust them so far as you get these convergence results. This is the usual way to put it. But you're of course right. I mean, if you make something very stupid wrong in your code and all the different resolutions converge to the same wrong result, then it doesn't help you.
But also, without doing anything stupid, I know that say you know what you're doing. But, say there is some shot noise, right? You have these halos, small circular small halos,
yeah.
And you have a finite number of particles in there. So that shot noise is not in the convergence step.
Well, you can.
And it's not in the resolution.
Well, if you look at, okay.
The fact that you have a finite number of particles per halo.
Yeah, right.
Small halos.
But if you want, for example, to look at the subhalos, you can again make convergence studies for the subhalos also and can see how far you trust them. But of course, at a certain limit, you are dominated by noise. This is of course right. I mean, if the particle number is very low, this is of course right.
So, this is a general question. So, is there anything better one can do to specify how trustable and to what extent the results of the simulations are to be used? besides the convergence test?
Well, as far as I know, this is the standard way to test the convergence. I mean, of course, you can see whether you are in certain parts in the regime where you can get analytic results and then compare to this. This is the other way.
Well, another way, which is what you guys also do, is just to run different seeds of the initial, different realizations of the initial conditions at the same resolution and see how much variance is. That's kind of testing cosmic.
Right, problems. This is the object-to-object scatter that you can address with this. So actually, I will come to this point. This is another point. I mean, if you simulate only one object, you might be somehow biased by this special object, by its merging history or whatever. So this is actually, I will show this in a second. So just before, I want to show you the difference in subtle mass function that also converges. It's again a convergence test of this Pauli over the Gauss level for 1.9. But the object-to-object scatter, you're right, you want to get a handle on this. And this is why we actually simulated six halos with a resolution that is slightly above the VLM tier 1. So we have this set of six different simulations. So we can get a handle on the object-to-object scatter and on the different merging histories to see what really the physics is of these halos. So we refer to this whole series of different simulations, the Aquarius simulation series. And then we will be next week or in 2 weeks, first paper on this, where we discuss this high resolution run. And this is currently the highest resolution run for a Milky Way sized halo, actually. So I wanted to make this point to give you an idea what the current state of the art for these Milky Way sized halo simulations is. So what I'm going to talk about, this is not the focus of my talk, but what I'm going to talk about is even smaller scales that we actually cannot address with the Aquarius, not with the VLF tier 2 or any other simulation currently. Because I'm interested in these fine-grained caustics. So especially I'm interested in the fine-grained phase space. So if you look at fine-grained phase space, then this is the picture you have in mind. So the cold dark matter with its cold and collisionist character is actually restricted to a 3D hypersurface and 6D phase space. So this means all cold dark matter lies on this line. And whenever you grow a nonlinearity, then this shows up as wind up here in this thing. So in here you have what we discussed yesterday, these streams. So in this case, you have three streams, and it depends now on the winding up how many streams you actually have. And if you have a high number of streams, you expect this smooth velocity distribution. And what I'm focusing in this talk on is actually the border where the number of streams changes here from 1 to 3 or from 3 to 1 or whatever. Because there, if you project this down to get the density, you get a very, very high density. And these are these fault catastrophes, or also called caustics, that I'm going to focus on. And the reason why we want to focus on this is that if you have very dense and many caustics in a halo, then actually this could boost the annihilation radiation of this object. So this is a different boost from the subhalo boost we discussed yesterday. This is even on smaller scales. So this will boost the diffuse emission of the object. So the main problem for this thing actually to analyze is that we actually do not have the simulation that reached that resolution. So there was, I think it was Sikivi who made an estimate how many particles you at least need to resolve these fine-grained phase space in a simulation. And it's in the order of 1,000 billion particles. And this is still three orders of magnitude of what we currently can do with simulations. Well, I think he had an estimate. He analytically calculated somehow that he expects 100 streams near the sun. And then he said, OK, to get 100 streams, I should have at least 100 particles per dimensions in six dimensions. So this was where you get this 10 to the 12, and this then translates to the number. It's a very crude estimate. I'm pretty sure you'd need even a lot more particles to resolve this. Yeah, limits actually. So I would say you need at least 10 or 100 more times particles. But
microhalos, how many of them are there? So you need at least that many or more. The microhalos are probably more than one.
Well, I don't know who will have the talk on the microhalos.
10 to the 15 a microhalos of it?
Yeah,
so even more than that.
Yeah, so I mean, it's very low level estimates. Right. So, okay, but the problem is that we actually cannot simulate this currently. And this is why where people usually get an idea on these caustics, on these fine grained caustics, just by considering different analytic models. So the most known model is actually the Birchinger model, or the Filmon-Guldreich model that we discussed yesterday, where you have these caustics in fine-grained phase space. And for example, Roya did lots of work on this model. The recent work was on cosmic rays. So, but there are other models. For example, the caustic ring model that was pushed forward over the last 10 years by Pierre Sikivi, where he extended the Filmon-Guldreich solution to account for non-radial orbits. And then he has so-called inner core sticks that are associated with the paracenter of the orbits. And they, in his model, just built simple ring-like structures. And this is why he calls this model the ring model. And yeah, there, 1 week ago or 2 weeks ago, there was, again, another paper on this model by Duffy and Sikivi. And then there are works that are more general, like a work by Craig Hogan, that work on a more orbit-based approach, where he proposed the term micropancakes. So these are fault catastrophes that are, in the end, he just called them micropancakes. So, but nevertheless, the question is how realistic all these models are, because they are quite simplified and do not account for the complicated dynamics you have in the halo. The question is whether they predict the correct caustic structure, whether they predict the correct caustic densities, and this all boils down to the question whether they predict actually the correct boost due to these caustics. So our way to learn about these caustics was actually pushing the simulation forwards by implementing a new method that allows to access the fine-grained phase space in standard n-body simulations. So the idea is quite simple. So if you can calculate the local density around the dark matter particle, and by local I mean not the usual mean density you calculate by SPH or Voronoi tessellation or something like this, I mean really the density in an infinitesimal volume around the particle, then this local density is automatically the density of the stream this dark matter particle is embedded in. And if you can get a handle on this density, then you actually can also identify the caustics and the number of streams just because you know the fine-grained phase space then. So what we follow here is we follow the phase space density, but then we project this down to get the real space and three dimensions density. So this is actually shown here. So we have our particle in the simulation, just a normal dark matter particle. And then we imagine somehow a virtual cloud around it. And this is a cloud in phase space then. And then we follow how this phase space cloud gets distorted. So if you are in phase space, then the volume of this, okay, this is, sorry for this confusion. This cloud actually is already in the projected space. So this is where the volume grows, because if you're in phase space, then the volume has to be conserved of this cloud. So if you then write down the equations for the phase-based distortion of this volume element, you end up with a tensor differential equation looking like this. This is a quite simple equation that is only driven by the tidal field. And this we can easily calculate in the simulation. And then you solve for each dark matter particle this differential equation. And this then tells you how the phase-based volume behaves of this particular particle. And if you then want the stream density, then you just do projection of this 6 × 6 tensor with some kind of projection operators down for 3 × 3 and actually get the stream density of this particle. So this D with the two lines below is actually now 3 × 3 tensor that tells you how the configuration space around the particle gets distorted. So what you essentially do, you solve for each dark matter particle in the simulation. You solve this equation, and then you get for each dark matter particle an estimate of the stream density. And the good thing about this is that this has some nice properties, because these distortion tensors you calculate, these are actually the Jacobians of the mapping from initial to final conditions. They have the property that whenever you pass through a caustic, whether it doesn't depend on the caustic, this is true for general caustics, then it actually changes sign. And this can be detected in n-body simulation quite efficiently. So we can detect with these all large-scale caustics in the simulations. Another thing that was discussed yesterday is the idea that you can get the number of streams by the mean density of the divided by the stream density. But this is, I'm going not to focus on this, but on the caustics here. So what we did, we implemented this method in Volker Springel's gadget code. Actually, this was the gadget 3 code. So this is a strong improvement of the gadget 2 code that was specially written for this Aquarius project. So it has various improvements, especially in the domain composition and parallelization, to handle very large simulations. So we implemented this, and then did some first tests. So this is what I'm going to show you here. So this is now a particle integrated in a live halo, and the live halo is, for simplicity, modeled just by a Hunquist sphere. So this is the green line here, and all these spikes are actually the caustics that, yeah. Life is just an n-body realization where we have modeled the halo in as a quasi-equilibrium system of a bunch of particles. So this is Yeah, right. We just generate a random realization of this and then have it. And we compare this to a smooth integration where we just take the exact smooth potential and integrate the particle in the same potential, and then compare these both. So the first point is, I mean, in a perfect world, these should look the same, but of course, you see they look not the same. But the important point is that the number of spikes that are actually the caustics that the particle passes through in the parasend and upper center, the number is comparable here, and also the spacing of the caustics is more or less the same. Exactly, yeah, this is just a test particle here. So,
particle noise?
Yeah, this is noise. And it's noise, and also, I mean, I did these simulations under very general conditions, so the force is also calculated not at very accuracy, just with a normal tree. So this is just pushing it not to the limit to see how it works in general.
Do you get the same number of spikes in that period between the smooth and
the number? Yeah, I counted them once. It was more or less the same. Yeah. So it's, yeah, it's, but I will come to this point also later. So then you can do the same exercise for all particles in that halo, and then bin actually the stream density we calculate for these particles in different radial bins shown here. So in red is the smooth integration result, so the exact result, and in blue the embodied result. And you see the overall agreement is quite good. And what you also see is that in the outer part, you have these very dense streams. And the reason for this is that these particles are dynamically quite young, so they have not undergone many orbits. So the stream density didn't decrease that far. But what you also see is that you see some discreteness effect of the embodied simulations just here, that you tend to some lower stream densities. But if you play around a bit with the softening, then you can decrease or increase this. So this is clearly a discreteness effect of the embodied simulation.
Okay. The particles wait for a while and see what is the density.
Yeah. Well, yeah, right. This is after a certain simulation time, yeah, right. And then I just built this in radio bits.
And if you wait longer, then this would
this will shift to lower densities in all panels.
Yeah. All of them would shift,
yeah, right. Because the general evolution of the density in such a spherical system is just a power law of the power of two, so it decreases like one of the square in such a spherical system.
But there would be a tail at the high density, that would be due to caustics.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Some particles are.
Right, yes. This is, these are these parts here that are. So here's stream density one, here's the initial density, and these are all caustics units.
Do you find also at the high end an effect from something?
No, actually, this is quite. Yeah, but actually, this is not so strongly affected by the softening. It's only this lower end. And so the caustic properties are quite stable. So this is, I will also show in the next plot here, where actually did the following. I counted for each particle how often it passed through a caustic after, and then did again a radial binning here. So this means typically the particles here have only undergone two or caustics or so. And then, since the dynamical timescale is shorter here in the center, they pass across more caustics. And again, I show a comparison between the smooth and the embodied result, and you can see that about up to the softening length, the agreement is very well. And also, if you change the resolution of the simulation just by an after a factor of 32 without adapting the softening or anything else, you just get more or less the same answer. And this means that the caustic identification is very stable with respect to any numerical parameters. And the reason for this is quite simple. The caustics themselves depend only on the sign change in this determinant. And this is quite stable with respect to numerical parameters.
Real radius here? Is there real radius? This is a Hankwist.
This is a Hankwist. I think I forgot. It's just. I mean, this is the outer part of the sphere, so it's, there's nothing else. I mean, from these results, we think that annihilation boost estimates based on the caustic identification, based on this method, should be quite robust. I mean, these were just tests, so to speak. And
that's the difference.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. That's of course right. So it's, but nevertheless, the caustic identification, it's an issue of the orbit integration, how well you do the orbit integration. And if the orbit integration is perfect, then you get the perfect result. If it's right.
This is always structured on smaller scales than I'm missing, that'll be affecting the caustic structure. Right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's of course right. So you're right that it affects the caustic structure. So if you look in configuration space how the caustics are located, this is affected by the softening by these numerical things. This is right. But if you look at the number of caustics in the whole object, this is more or less stable. What do you mean by
the amount of small scale structure, right? The number of caustics you form has to change.
Well, okay, if this, yeah, right. Okay.
If you have a small scale, I mean.
If you have the small scale,
yeah,
okay, that's right. Yeah, right.
So for your test halo, yeah, this is all.
Yeah, okay, that's right.
But in reality.
Okay. Yeah, this point is correct.
So the other question I have, what do you mean by the number of caustics?
It's just that account for each particle how often in a given time span it passed the caustics. So it's just an internal counter that counts how many caustics the particle has passed.
How many sign changes.
Yeah, right.
So that's the function of particle. And so then how do you plot that as a function of radius?
Well, I take a snapshot of the system at a given time and then been just all particles that are given radius and then take the median of this, I suppose, for the plot. And this is actually another plot that shows the caustic distribution. So, how many particles have passed a given number of caustics and the time resolution here. And clearly, I mean, if the time increases, the system gets older, so you get more particles that have passed more caustics and you get less particles that have passed a low number of caustics. So these were all tests, and this is all written up in this paper here. So what I want to focus on now is what we also discussed yesterday, is the spherical infall that was first proposed by Bötching and Pullman and Goldreich. So Jörg yesterday already showed these plots of the phase space and these plots of the radial density profile, where you have these caustics, these points. And I will now show some tests we did with our method and this model. So what I show you here first is we set up a simulation where we put lots of particles on the Hubble flow and made a small density perturbation in the center. So this is more or less the Bötschinger test. So, and the color of this line here will indicate how many caustics the particles have passed. So initially there are no caustics, clearly. And then you let the system evolve and then you see that at this point the color changes here and this is the first outer caustic. And if you then increase, then you get here the next outer caustic and so on. And the reason why the color also changes when you pass through the zero is that this is actually, I will come back to this point later, it's actually the reason that you do here a 3D integration. And if you do 3D, the orbits are not perfectly radial. So they always have a small paracenter distance. And this is as soon as you pass through this, the number of caustics changes. These are actually the Sakibi inner caustics that you see here. Then. This is numerical, yeah. If the integration were perfect, then you shouldn't see them. Yeah, right. That's correct.
It's a full 3D simulation you're doing here?
Yeah, it's a full 3D simulation.
And the orbits stay radial? I mean, they don't know that.
Well, they stay for a while radial. I mean, you cannot force this for up for a long time. So you have to use a quite high softening to get this. I mean, if you use a typical softening of an advanced simulation, then you cannot force them for a long time on the radial orbits, then right. But if you use a very high softening for particle this separation, then you can force them for quite a long time to stay in perfect radial orbits. And this is why this looks like this. I mean, otherwise, it's totally messed up. But we will also come back to this point. Okay, the other thing you can get with this GDE approach is the number of streams in this system. So this is, again, the phase space at initial time. And here I plot the number of streams we calculate. And these are not perfect results because we did this simulation only with 100,000 particles. So you can improve this a lot. But shows already the general idea. So if you go on, then you have here three streams. And OK, couldn't ignore the scatter here, but it's about the right magnitude here. And then you go further on and you get here five streams, and it's around five here, and so on. So you can actually see these steps more or less, even at this low particle resolution, where the number of streams increases. So this is the stream counting issue I mentioned in the beginning. So. But the main focus of this talk should be on the annihilation signal. And there's one complication if you want now to get the annihilation boost due to the caustics, namely that our GDE approach is essentially a linear order approach. So we do a linear order expansion of the distance between neighboring trajectories. And this has the effect that whenever you pass through caustic, then this method actually predicts an infinite high caustic density. So this is, of course, not correct, because there's a small velocity dispersion, both for neutrinos and axions and whatever, that will naturally cut off this density. So you have somehow to take care of this. And Royer, 2 years ago, had a work together with Shandarin, where they calculated this analytically, how the profiles should look like if you take into account given velocity dispersion, for example, here for this Gaussian shape. And then you can construct again this radial density profile, but do a correct physical cutoff at these points, for example, for neutralinos or for axions. Right, this is the density profile, sorry. Yeah, so, I mean, if you do not cut off, then you get just for zero velocity dispersion, that's just this divergent result. And if you then take a finite velocity dispersion, then you get this Gaussian or whatever shape, depending on the velocity distribution you use. So, but the problem is, how should we implement this now in this GDE approach? Because we do not have the higher orders. We only have the linear orders so far implemented. So this was for a long time a problem, how to catch this correctly. And the solution to this problem is actually to do a proper phase space analysis. So what you do is you look at initial phase space where your simulation, so to speak, started. So this is the Lagrangian region in Q and P coordinates, where P is the velocity and Q the coordinate. This is, for simplicity, now done in a two-dimensional phase space. And then you have a mapping from these coordinates to the final space, where you then have your coordinate X and V. And this is just a phase space sheet, how it evolves. And then you can write down the phase space density, just as a, for example, with an Gaussian velocity distribution, like here. So the sigma is the velocity dispersion of the neutralino or whatever. And then you can calculate the real space density by just integrating out the velocities. And then it depends, crucially, what you do with this real space density. If you do here an expansion with respect to V in linear order, then you actually end up with a result I showed you before, that is the GDE result, the linear order result. But in the caustics, this is not enough, so you have to go to the next order. So we have to do a second order expansion. And if you do all this algebra, then you finally end up with a result like this. So in a normal point is what we call all points outside of caustics. You can use simply the linear order, so the first order result. This is what I showed you before. But in the caustic, this actually vanishes here and gives it this infinite density. And then you go to the next order and get this result. And this then depends on the second derivatives that we do actually not calculate with the GDE, because we only have these first derivatives here. So, but it turns out that you can estimate these quantities quite correctly using the information we have on the first order and the particle acceleration. So you just can combine particle acceleration and the information we already have to get an estimate of this. And if you are interested in annihilation, then actually it's not, the annihilation signal is not so sensitive to the correct cutoff, because if you look at the integral, it's only logarithmically divergent. So it doesn't make a, if you are off by a factor of 10 even, it doesn't make a much difference for the annihilation signal you get. So we will use this estimate. And the important point here that you should focus on is this prefactor here. So this prefactor involves S1 and S2, and these are actually, you have to imagine when you pass through the caustic, then you will actually pass through the caustic in a given direction that is normal to the caustic sphere, for example. But you still have in three dimensions two other directions. And these other directions will generally tend to spread out the whole system and decrease the caustic density. So these are two stretch factors that correspond to the expansion of the other directions. And if they are very large, then they actually will push down your maximum caustic density. If you now do a 1D integration, then of course they will not be that large. I mean, they will be of order unity or something like this. So then your caustic density is more or less given by this. But if you do a full 3D integration, then the density will strongly be depressed by this prefactor here. So we plug this in into Gadget, all these calculations. So whenever Gadget passes through caustic, it actually does the correct cutoff and integrates correctly the annihilation rate through the caustic. So, and these are some first tests we did with this method. So these are actually comparisons of our results we get with Gadget and with Royer's results she gets in her analytic treatment for the Böttcher case. So here's the time evolution, and I show here the results for three caustics. So this is showing the thickness of the caustic. So due to the final finite velocity dispersion, you have also a finite thickness of the caustic. So this scale is in milliparsec. So for a given velocity dispersion, for example, for the neutralino of 0.03 centimeter per second, you then get thickness in this range of milliparsec. And you can see the black lines are Royer's analytic results, and the colored things are just the numerical results we get, and they perfectly agree for this range for the outer three caustics. And then you can also try.
But is this Harry-Kerr profile still, or?
No, sorry. These are then. So for this simulation, we set up the perfect Böttinger solution just in an embodied code, and then the system evolved. So these use subsimilar input contingent. Okay, and then the more interesting thing is calculating the caustic density. So this is here the caustic density in terms of the infall density of the stream. So, and again, the black lines are Royer's result, and the colored results are the results we got with a numerical code. And you can also do this with respect to the critical density, and then you can see the first caustic here that has about 10 to the 4 critical densities and so on. And this all agrees with the analytic results quite well.
How does the density profile look when you run this test? Is it like the Böttinger prediction? Or?
You mean this radial density profile, or? Well, if you calculate the density profile just based on SPH estimate, then of course you do not get exactly these spikes. So you get some small things, but if you add up the caustics that we calculate here, then you get the correct spikes at the correct position and the correct cutoff with these correct density. The corridor. Okay, so these were just some tests to see how it works. So the question is now, what happens if you go beyond these subsimilar info models? So this is again a comparison we did with we compared to the Royer's result of the caustic structure growth. So here's shown again time, and here the size of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and some caustics. So this is the outermost caustic, and this is now for epsilon equals 0.2. The others were always for epsilon equals 1. We can again see that we can quite accurately follow this evolution with the code. So in phase space, this looks then like this. So you have, this is done with a 1D integration now. You get this nice phase space field, and you can clearly see all the caustics identified where the color changes. But if you do this integration, so I should say these integrations are all done for a self-similar info model with a given core softening. So to get this stable solutions here, we have to force to use a quite high core softening in the center to make the system stable. But if you decrease this core softening only a bit to get the realistic self-similar info model, then you immediately run in these simulations. So this looks at first glance like numerical nonsense or something like this. But actually, this is not the case. These instabilities were discovered already by Wittrow more than 10 years ago. And Wittrow refers to Hannon that discovered these instabilities even in the 70s. So these are well-known instabilities even in the 1D case, where you do not preserve actually the correct phase space sheets. And if you look at the caustic structure and compare this to the plot before, you see lots of more caustics in the second plot than here. So the number of caustics increases, but I will show you later that nevertheless the annihilation will drop down in these systems. So if you do the same integration now, not in 1D, but go even to 3D, then you give the system even more degrees of freedom.
And 1D versus
3D. So this is 1D. With a very small softening in the core. And this, what I showed you before.
One-dimensional simulation?
Or yeah, this is just what we do in the simulation. We only take, or we integrate, so to speak, the Böttinger equation in the embodied code. So this is not using a tree or something. It's just an integration of the Böttinger equation that only accounts for radial orbits.
And it's unstable in the center. Right?
Yeah. So what happens actually is the system is intrinsically unstable, but you trigger the instability by the particles that pass through the center, and then they get a slight different energy, and then this triggers this instability. So, but this is a quite strong effect. And I mean, it we are not the first. This was already.
So do you know what is the central profile then after this institute they have?
So even if you run these, if you run in these institutes, the density profile stays more or less the same. It's only the phase space that gets totally disrupted. So yeah.
Is this to be considered a numerical problem or is it?
No, it's not a numerical problem. So you can prove analytically that this instability exists. So this is the first point. And the second point is that you trigger the instability by numerics. This is correct. So in the case I showed you before, we used a quite high core softening, and this prevented us from triggering the instability. But this is not a realistic system, because in the case before, I had a core softening that is 10% of the turnaround failures. So you already automate then the caustic spacings and these things. So if you go to, say, this is not for 2.5% of the turnaround radius, then you already trigger this. And in a physical system, you would trigger these instabilities just by small inhomogeneities in the density field or whatever. So it's true that the instability is triggered by numerics, but the instability is physical. So this is... Well, it's the same as...
Maybe we should move on.
Okay.
We have 5 minutes, maybe.
Okay. So now you can let the restriction of 1D go and just do it in full 3D, and this looks now already quite similar to the VLKF 2 plus phase space. So what you see here new is that you also see here inner caustics, so the color changes, this is what I mentioned before. So really, and if you compare the number of caustics, it again increases, so we have lots of more caustics. And the instability that is working here is actually the radial orbit instability. Yeah, okay. That is well known already for stellar systems or whatever. So you build up essentially bar in these systems, and this was already pointed out by Ben Moore in 2001, even earlier by lots of other people.
I think that was pointed out in the
70s. Yeah, right, for the stellar. Right. So and this is actually also what totally alternates the caustic structure here. And this is actually a plot of the caustic structure growth in this 3D gravity. So you do not have any more of these nice caustic structures just because of these instabilities. So now the question is, how does this affect the annihilation signal? And I should say that these are very preliminary results. So what I do here, again, I contrast this 1D stable against the 1D unstable, against the 3D unstable case. So here's the annihilation you get from the smooth density field just by an SPH estimate. And you cannot see any real caustics. I mean, you see some density contrast, but you do not see any clear rings. And here I mark every caustic we have identified up to a given radius in the system. And then I can, so to speak, sum up the annihilation contribution of these caustics to this image. And then you can, I hope at least you can see it, can see these rings of the caustics in the stable case. So then you can do the same for the 1D unstable case, and you can already see that the caustic structure is totally destroyed. Then you bin this up and you do not see any rings or something else anymore. And then you can do the 3D case, and here you have the bar that you mentioned just due to radial orbit instability. And most of the caustics then just are in this region of the bar, and there's no full 3D system. And if you bin up the contribution here, and you see it's very concentrated around this bar, and you do not see anything in the outer region anymore.
The color show?
Here, the color. This is density square. Yeah, project density square here.
Why 6 points?
Well, okay. So to see them at all, I mean, they are smaller than the pixel size, so to speak. I took, I think, here 2 times 2 pixel. And
lines or surfaces are around points?
Well, you see in the, if you look at this case, these are just, I mean, you have a sphere, and then you make a projection, so they are projected. And this is why you see these circles here. Okay, this is the reason. So now the interesting question, how strong the boost factors are. So please do not refer too strong to these numbers, because it's really very preliminary here. So but what you can get from these plots is now the comparison between these three cases. So this is the 1D unstable case. So you have this outer caustic, outermost caustic, then the next. And the contribution, the boost factor decreases just because the density of the mean density just increases towards the center. At some point, it will just dominate over the caustics. So, but nevertheless, you see here this clear structure, and you get also quite high values for this boost factor. But if you do it for the 1D unstable case, you already strongly suppress this, and you should focus especially on this inner region here. So, in this region, you know this. if you now go to 3D, then you can see this is actually flat in this region, so you do not have any boost anymore.
I mean, integrated over a region.
Yeah, if I do the integration over the total, then it's also like this. If you do the 1D stable case, you get a certain result that is 2 times higher than the 1D unstable case, and if you do it then for 3D, it's again a factor of 4 lower than this 1D unstable case. If you integrate over a whole radial range.
Well, so that's the relative numbers, but what about an absolute number? I mean, what is the boost factor for the 1D stable case?
For the 1D stable case, it was already calculated by Royal. This is about 40% if you account for the 20 outermost caustics. So then you go down by a factor of 2 if you go to unstable 1D, and then again by a factor of 5 or 6 if you go to 3D. So it's nearly negligible for the 3D case. And this leads me to my conclusion. So the first thing I briefly mentioned was this Aquarius simulation, where there should soon be some publications on this. That is currently the best resolved Milky Way sized halo. And the second point was on this GDE that we use to resolve even smaller scales. And the results we got so far is that for sure caustics are characteristics of cold dark matter. So there's no question that they exist if dark matter is cold. But they do not form these simple geometric structures that Sikivi and other people assume. Then the self-similar inform models do not capture the correct physics because they do not account for any of these physical instabilities in the system. Then 1D models in general, or for sure, overestimate the maximum density of caustics because they do not account for these other two dimensions that leads to a depression of the maximum caustic density. And yeah, this is then the last point, 3D leads to a lower caustic density due to this stretching factors I mentioned. And in total, the bottom line is that we think currently, at least from the results, that the annihilation contribution of caustics to the diffuse emission should be negligible at this stage. Okay, thanks. Yeah.
Do we have to launch? I mean, if you turn the question around and say, are they? Because it looked like you actually still have them in a 3D case.
Yeah, there was one outer.
There's an outer one that has a boost factor too, and therefore, if you detected a halo at all, you'd be able to go.
So we have to do this analysis more carefully because I discussed this already with Roya that the point is some of the boost of the diffusion emission in total should be negligible, but probably you can see some signatures of the caustic. But this needs to, I mean, I have to do this a bit more careful because it's not very preliminary.
Okay. That's a quick comment. I think what's happening might be a possible problem that you only see the caustics when particles are going through them. But then if you're not sampling the whole caustic with the particles, that means that there are a lot of places that are caustic, but since there is no particle going through them.
But this is the usual, this is the same problem that you have with embedded spaces. I mean, it's just a Monte Carlo representation of
that. You might be then underestimating the effect of caustics, because there are caustics everywhere, but there are only a few places where particles are going through them.
Well, I do not think that this is a major limitation, but for sure we are limited by the sampling of phase space. That's right.
But its filling factor is correct, right?
Yeah, this is the point.
No, but see, there is a problem. Caustics are surfaces, but then when you look at these caustics, they are points.
Right. And the fraction of that surface that he's sampling is about
this
right.
Should be correct.
The fraction of the
that he's sampling with his points is about right. So.
So that, okay. So
yeah, it's just
we should talk about this. Yeah. But it's very interesting. Thank you. And